A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
This is a Royfield Brown production. Find others on Apple Podcasts.
Dumpty, 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 dum, dumpty, dumpty, da, da, dumpty, 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 dum, dumpty, diddly, dum, dumpty, diddly, dumpty, dumpty, diddly, dum, dumpty, 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 dum, dumpty, 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 diddly, dum.
This is Dumpty Dum, a weekly podcast about the Archers and the goings-on of Ambridge. I'm Jacqueline Berto, who loves a picky tea, me.
And I'm Stephen Bowden, who could see clearly that the ball hit her pad, not her bat.
And then there's you, our lovely Dumpty Dummers, with your rucksacks terrified but determined. Welcome to this week's Dumpty Dum, a show about our favourite country village. This week's episodes were written by Sarah MacDonald Hughes, who, like Nick Warburton last week, delivered a shocking Wednesday episode, but shocking in a very different sense. Coming up, we have calls from
Witherspoon, with thoughts about the movies.
Glyn, who wants to tell some Beechwood residents where to go.
Roz, who is enjoying Joy.
Michelle, who is liking Helen at the moment.
Lillian, who might be meeting Joy and Helen in Corfu.
Claire, who is worried about Chris' reaction.
And finally, Matthew, who is disappointed by Harry.
We also have a WhatsApp text message from Abby, a first-time texter in Nara, an email from Amanda in Thailand, who is a first-time emailer in Nara, and an email from our regular correspondent, Chris, in Indiana. Plus, we have The Week in Ambridge by Suey, a roundup of the Dumpty Dum Facebook group from Vicky, and the tweets of the week from Theo. Before we start talking too much, let's remind ourselves of what happened over the last 7 days with a roundup of The Week in Ambridge from Suey.
Hello, lovely people. It's Suey, Queen or Tot on the Twitters, and a Sunday to Thursday roundup of what's happened this week in Ambridge. And we'll see what happens and whether I get to do Friday night. Otherwise, you'll have to imagine it for yourselves. So, there was cricket on Sunday in an away match at Little Croxley. There was hitty stick ball and apparently hitty pad ball as well. Alistair pointed out the ball to pad interaction and got the team captain Laura's phone number for a drink at some point in the future. Alistair was, as usual, pokily indecisive and blathered that Denise asking her what was happening and she gave excuses about why she couldn't get things moving with John. Fallon and Alice kissed and made up, and Harrison gave Ed a pep talk and told him to talk to Emma, as he's just discovered by Googling it that tree surgery is dangerous. Maybe if you'd typed in tree surgery happy experiences, you would have come off a bit better, Ed. Harrison is clearly doing random acts of kindness as he took on Ed and then Henry, who wants to find out whether he actually likes cricket or if it was just something Rob wanted him to like. If he stops throwing the bat at the ball, maybe there will be a U team for Ambridge. Ed spent some of the tree money on putting a lamb in plaster, then dropped Alistair in it with Denise, teasing him about the possibility of calling her. Alistair then asked Denise whether he should go for a drink with Laura. Oh, he's such a dipstick. Emma is in full-on fitness training, ready to stop falling out of trees and becoming another entry on the Health and Safety Executive website. That's the Health and Safety Executive for our overseas listeners. You don't mess with the HSE. Fallon bought a bonsai tree from a tea room customer for good luck to give to Emma. This put Ed in a tailspin over the possibility of death. None of this has occurred to him while they were talking about setting the business up and paying for their knockoff eBay chainsaws. Then there was Harry and Alice. Oh dear. He's gone off to rehab, but only after the two of them had a bonk. If she gets pregnant from that one shag, I will hunt you down, scriptwriters. Alice then gave Harry's mother, Eve, a pep talk Lily, in the meantime, is looking after Martha, Alice having lied for the umpteenth time this week about what she was doing. Lily made her soup and cheese on toast, which vied against Harrison as kindest after the week for me. Alice repaid this by cracking open a bottle of wine as soon as she'd left and having a large glug. Oh, dear. Following day, Alice was all cheery and effectual at the stables, and they sailed through a retest of the stable safety and process investigation. Only the local council, though. I kind of wish the HSE had been doing it. Things might have been different. Also on the dangerous list was Jack's use of Henry's old skateboard. No mention of personal protective equipment. Who knows what he's going to break when he falls off. Helen invited Joy to come over. I thought initially she said for soup, proving she's her mother's daughter, but there were olives, leading to a vague plan of a girly holiday on a Greek island in their future. Maybe the new doctor, Azra, will become buddies once she moves into Beechwood, although she was warned off Joy as the local busybody. Has no one told her about Joy's cat whispering powers? Hello. So let's just catch up with Friday night, where Alistair went on a date that went horribly wrong. And Joy helped Azra to get chocolate in the shop, which went really right. And then said, come to the dance exercise class, where Alistair met Denise. Oh, they were snogging. And then Joy turned up. So, you know, all great. Let's see what happens next week then. Hope it's a good one.
Thank you for that, Suey. I knew that all the health and safety stuff would suit Suey this week. So, Stephen, how was your journey up to London? Because that's where we are, isn't it? We're no longer in two different countries, two different time zones.
No, instead of being on opposite sides of the channel, we're on opposite sides of the Euston Road in different hotels.
But it's easier to do this by the internet, we hope, rather than trying to do it around the same table.
Yeah, at least we'll be able to.
6 o'clock in the morning.
The same way as we normally do. I had a pretty straightforward journey up to London. I came up by train yesterday lunchtime, stopped to buy some essential supplies for a camping trip I'm doing next weekend, which will make recording next week's podcast even more challenging, perhaps, than this week. And then re-listened to most of the episodes of The Archers, sitting in the sunshine in Russell Square, found my hotel, and then we all met up in the evening.
Yeah, great. My journey was, I came in from France on Tuesday and spent some time in Immingham. And then yesterday, my daughter and I travelled down on what I can only describe as Party Central. We got on a little two-carriage train to Doncaster. And then the Doncaster train was full of people with bottles of Prosecco and balloons and everything. My plan to re-listen to the week of The Archers was scuppered because I just couldn't hear myself think. It was quite exciting, really. There were a lot of people enjoying themselves, which I'm not normally a party pooper, but by the time we whizzed through Stevenage, I was ready for the journey to end.
Yeah, they didn't have any parties going on the Great Western Main Line. I think it's too serious a railway for that sort of thing.
Oh, well, it's those northerners, you know, all those. The train actually started in Edinburgh, so I think he just picked up people all the way down the east coast. So it's obviously, when you're going to have a party, you have it on a train, you get to London, then you probably have to go and lie down for the next 2 days. So I think it's a way of saving money when you're in London. I think that's more than enough about us and how we got to this point in our week. So let's get on to the important bit, which is you, our lovely caller in us.
And first up, there will be a very familiar sound just after this.
Hello, Pusscat.
Y'all know how this goes.
Hey, baby, I hear the blues are calling. Tossed salads and scrambled eggs.
Greetings, Jacqueline, Stephen, and all Dumpty Dumbers around the world. It's Witherspoon and Angus Haggis here, wishing a happy Passover to all who celebrate. I'm caller innering on Sunday, so I won't be focused on the goings-on in Ambridge of the past 7 days. Consider it a snack, a Sunday non-Archers caller in. First, I should mention that a neighbor on my apartment building floor is named Boaz. Yes, he was named after the figure in the Old Testament. Next, looking back on the Archers episode that shall not be named, it occurred to me that the scriptwriters made a big mistake. Such farces would best be enjoyed in the visual medium. My choice of movie farces, like Stephen's, is What's Up, Doc? Dumpty Dumbers, it's the funniest movie ever made. A hilarious Barbara Streisand, Madeline Kahn, and Austin Pendleton, and a very underrated Ryan O'Neill. It was released in 1972, significant because it was 2 years after Love Story, and What's Up, Doc concludes with a very funny wink and a nod to that iconic teary romance. Another film recommendation, this one more serious, is Days of Wine and Roses, starring Jack Lemmon and Lee Remick, as a couple both fighting alcoholism. In this film, it's the husband, after many failures, who goes to inpatient treatment in AA and successfully achieves sobriety, but he sets clear boundaries with his wife that she can't come back until she becomes sober because he can't risk his own sobriety. Finally, as many Ambridge residents are trying to succeed in business, I recommend the musical How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying. There's the film version with Robert Morse. I saw two Broadway productions, one with Matthew Broderick and one with Daniel Radcliffe. There's a great clip on YouTube from the 2011 Tony Awards with the latter, singing and dancing. Talk to you soon.
Thank you for that call, Witherspoon. And your call got me thinking, too, about films suitable for the inhabitants of Ambridge. And I had a few ideas, probably not as good as yours, but for instance, for Harrison, I thought there's a British farce, a classic from, I think, 1963, called The Wrong Arm of the Law, which had pretty much every top British comic in it somewhere or other, all about a gang of people impersonating police officers. I thought it was probably the level of mystery that Harrison could be trusted to solve. And I thought for Kirsty, there's the lovely Princess Mononoke from Studio Ghibli, which is all about forests and rewilding and so on. And I thought that Kirsty could be Ambridge's Princess Mononoke. And finally, the most obvious one of the lot, of course, for Kate, with her pagan rituals, as Miranda described them. And so for Kate, it would have to be the Wicker Man.
Wicker Man. Oh, very good. I'm not very good with films. I enjoy watching a film, but it's a bit like trying to remember the order of a series of books, but I do read a lot. And I've always, for the whole of my listening time, I've always associated the Grundys with the Larkin family from the Darling Buds of May. And then I think it was a TV series, probably in the 80s, with David Jason as the father. It was so in my head for a long, long time. Eddie Grundy looked like David Jason. So rather than a film, it's more of a book and a TV series. We could be playing that game, couldn't we? You know,
Charades.
And for the policeman one, I always associate Country Policeman with Heartbeat, which was set on the North York Moors, which was very dear to my heart and my youth. And for a long time, I worked in Pickering to school, which is where the North York Moors Railway goes from and leads up to Gothland, which was the setting for Heartbeat. So I've always imagined Harrison as being that kind of 1950s untechnical policeman on a motorbike. And I know that's combining Alan on his motorbike with Harrison. But to me, he's a country copper. I know that doesn't exist anymore. And we make jokes about Harrison. But and sometimes I think that we're unfair. We don't portray the police in the British countryside very well. But I don't know because I don't know so much about it now. But as I say, not really films, although I had to agree with you. The farce of the first Wednesday episode and What's Up, Doc that came to my mind straight away. As a film that I've watched and rewatched many times in my youth. And it made me go and search it out. And I watched not the whole of it. And I have to say, I always take away Ryan O'Neill as a beautiful actor from that film. But it's quite interesting because Witherspoon and myself are more or less the same age within months of each other. You're not that much younger. And there's a couple of other people who've said they like What's Up, Doc, and we're all in the same age group. So really, we probably need people who are younger, listeners who are younger than us or older than us. They might have a completely different reaction to that. Might have other films. It'd be good, interesting to hear what other people, which other films people can find characters that fit our Ambridge storylines at the moment. So interesting.
Something for the Facebook pages.
Ah, definitely. See, when we've finished gloating over the fact that we're in London this weekend, we'll have to ask a few questions on the Facebook page.
Next up, we have a call from Glyn.
Hello, Dumpty Dum. It's Glyn here. Well, in the Archers this week, we have to address Wednesday. We have to see the brutal reality that it is for Alice as a recovering alcoholic. For most of us, if we have a tough day, we feel like a drink the end of the day to wind down. We can have a drink at the end of the day. We wind down. That's the end of it. For Alice, it can never, ever be like that. And we were shown that on Wednesday. at least I think we were, of course. It's the magic of radio that we still, as of when I'm recording Thursday, haven't been told for certain that she was drinking alcohol, although it looks very probable. Well, what else? If the people in Beechwood, I can't remember their names, but if they think Joy is a busybody, then yes, they can go back to Surrey as quickly as possible. They can go, they can shut the door. You're not welcome in Ambridge anymore, as the song sort of goes. And that's all I've got to say on that matter. And finally, Helen, she never seems to have a good word for her boys. It's either complaining about Henry's food tech. Yes, I know it probably was awful, but do you really have to go around telling people that it was awful? And then to be complaining to Joy about Jack's skateboard. I mean, boost them up a bit. Most parents tend to go the other way, Helen, and boost their kids up when they really don't need it, rather than what you do is, which is take them down all the time. Anyway, I've got that off my chest. Looking forward to seeing some of you at the Academic Archers Conference. Bye.
Thank you for that, Glyn. Nice to hear from you this morning. Yeah, quite a few people have called in about Alice, so I think I won't touch on that subject now. And there's another caller about Joy, so we're going to leave that one. So let's get on to Helen. There's been a lot of criticism of Helen, and I've been amongst people criticising her for a long time. But to me, I didn't find her as irritating as apparently people did this week. I felt that she was a difficult time when you've got a teenager or a teenage boy in particular, I think, because they're developing and Henry is coming across as a very nice and mature boy and he's lovely with his mum and she is taking baby steps towards getting to know him and maybe she's trying to smother him. They've gone through a crisis as a family that I think any parent would smother their child having gone through the Rob experience. And the cricket thing, because Rob was all about winning and my boy and all the rest of it, I thought that his determination to see whether he liked it or not, playing cricket, and the fact that there was a great interaction with Harrison, I felt that she was quite natural with him. I didn't feel that she was critical, but she was supportive, but it was jokey in the way that only the Archers can do jokey. It helps that Harrison's gone into full mid-Pennine mode with his accent at the moment. But I didn't find Helen as irritating as a lot of people on our Facebook page did. What did you think, Stephen?
Well, I thought Helen was deeply unfair when it came to the food tech stuff because the first dish was vegetable chili and she admitted they didn't even eat it because it's been left in the bottom of a bag for a few days. So I think a combination of vegetable chili that they didn't eat and a Thai green curry that they really quite enjoyed suggests that his cooking is a lot better than Helen was giving Henry credit for. But I agree with you. Henry is crawling out of the mould that Rob had tried to force him into, trying to repair the damage and discover what he is really like himself. Because of what Rob did to him, he doesn't even know who he is. All he knows is what Rob wants him to be. And I think that he's now trying various things to learn. Cricket was one of them, and I suspect we'll see a few others as we go on. I think that he isn't very sporty, and that was probably part of the problem that Rob had, was he's not sporty. I don't know whether Jack is going to be in a worse state when it comes to this same business. I hope that Jack was sufficiently young for enough of the time that Rob didn't really do any damage to him, but it might be deeper lying than that.
Yeah, maybe it's gone over Jack's head, but in fact, the fact that Jack is trying and trying on the skateboard is an indication that he will make up his own mind and go forward in a different way to Henry. Henry has lived it and remembers it and has felt it. One of the things, what a fantastic actor. For a child actor, I feel that Henry has come across absolutely top this week. Very good.
Yes, indeed. Just one thing about Beechwood. With all this discussion about the various people in Beechwood and Bernadette from the parish council, nobody has mentioned the vile Kyle,
yeah.
Who lived there and was making life very unpleasant. It may be, of course, that he's moved on and he's not a problem anymore. But you'd have thought that when they were talking about neighbours, that would be one that people would mention because he was a really nasty piece of work.
Yes, he was. And in fact, of course, with Azra, who has not got white skin and probably doesn't have a flag of St. George flying, which we suspect that Kyle did, I'm wondering if that is a future story that is going to come along in Ambridge. I know we've had it before, but if Kyle is a conduit for that, maybe with Azra moving into Beechwood. So lots of possibilities. But I like her friendship with Joy.
Yes. I think she's a good addition to the cast. And I'm looking forward to finding out what Mick is like as a well-rounded character. Once we've worked out what the problem is with him being a bit off.
I think he's being off because he's being secretive, because he's got a plan to move in with Joy and she doesn't know it yet.
That's true. Yeah, I mean, she's definitely doesn't need to be worried that he might be cooling off on her. He's obviously
He's telling everybody, isn't he?
And she knows.
Yeah, exactly.
Shall we move
on? As long as he doesn't wear Speedos all the time.
Yeah. Shall we move on to our next call?
Yep. And
this one is from Roz.
Hi, folks. It's Roz from South Wales. I expect you'll get lots of comment about the anguish of hearing Alice take to the bottle again. Very distressing. And I do think some of the storylines are really good. I'm interested in the one with Ed having doubts about the obviously pretty dangerous tree surgery operations. You can sort of see it. I mean, in our garden, we've had people go up really high trees and they look very confident, but nonetheless, it is very scary. But what I really wanted to say was how much I enjoy hearing Joy. She's such a breath of fresh air. She's so good-hearted and decent. And in a dark world, sometimes I think you need good people to just lighten the load a bit. And I was jolly pleased to hear her. And I hope she and Mick are going to take a slightly bigger part. I like the idea of Mick as a security guard. I think that will bring him into the story more. Anyway, sorry if I've rambled on a bit, but I just wanted to say that I know people sometimes get cross with the light-hearted, silly episodes, but I think we need both. And I'm glad to see Joy back in the loop.
Thank you for that call, Rose. Yes, there was a lot of criticism of last week's farce, but I don't think that was because it was lighthearted. I think it was just because it didn't treat Brad as we know him. He was just shaped into this village idiot figure, produce a really low-grade bit of farce. I think that lighthearted storylines are great, and Joy has been brilliant at bringing those. The life class, where she stepped in at the last minute, had to the shock of everybody. I was slightly less impressed by the Toya storyline, which is when she met Mick, of course, at that bizarre food festival event, and Toya turned up and Pat didn't recognise her. But it was good fun. And yes, the Archers does need to have a balance between deeply challenging storylines and more lighthearted stuff. And of course, I've constantly been critical of the Rob and Helen era because that was just totally dominated by the one storyline. And I think it's the number of threads weaving together across the weeks that make the Archers what it is. And there have to be shades of darkness and light across that to make it interesting.
Yes, I agree completely. Yeah, I love Joy. A few months ago, we had the Be More Joy expression that came up through the programme. And I completely agree with Roz. It's good to have the light-hearted part of it. But I think one of the things I love about Joy is that she's not very self-aware. So when the woman who's going to rent the house out said to Azra, be aware of the gossipy woman, Joy appeared not to recognise herself as the person that was being described. And I just found that absolutely, because, you know, she can go through life worrying about what other people think and being cowed by it. But Joy is so joyful.
Yes, she just sails through. One interesting thing, we had her talking a little bit more about her past and being very explicit about the fact that she did have a child. And I think probably means that Rochelle is real and not a figment of her imagination.
Yeah, I agree. I've never gone along with the line that people think that she's a figment of her imagination. But it's brilliant that people have these ideas and look around and we're searching for the backstory of a character as joyful as Joy. But I've always felt that, yeah, there's some estrangement. And I have a vague, vague recollection that she said to somebody that following the divorce, Rochelle sided with the father, or the father and Rochelle were very close. But yeah, she's a real person. And I would love to know that backstory. I think so many of us are wanting to know the backstory around Joy and how she ended up in Beechwood. But Joy, to me, is someone who is, yes, maybe a bit of a busybody, but her and Helen, she brings out the joy in Helen. They have a good giggle together. She was brilliantly welcoming to Asra. It was just a kind of perfect joy week this week. She was great. So,
yes, yeah,
more joy.
I think we're going to get more joy. I think we're going to get her backstory worked out. I think this is the second time there has been a mention of stuff around her past. Yeah. And I think bringing Mick to the village is all part and parcel of more joy storylines.
Exactly. We can't always. I know people do criticise the fact that, oh, it's all the outsiders coming in. My late mother was a great one for saying, oh, it's no longer about the archers. But in fact, villages develop. If we stayed with the same family, it would all be inbred and nothing would happen. Well, nothing does happen, perhaps, which is the joy of it. But people, we need to have outsiders come in. People, Linda and Robert were outsiders for so many years.
Oh, they still are. They're still incomers.
Yes, well, this is the trouble when you've been brought up in a small rural village, Stephen. You look at incomers need to be there for at least 30 years. So they're getting there, aren't they, those things?
Yeah. Time for our next call. And this one is from Michelle.
Hi, all. I do hope all the Dumpty Dummers at the Academic Archers Conference are having a grand time. I'm with you in spirit. I've really enjoyed the domesticity of this week. People might think I'm mad, but I've quite enjoyed the scenes with Helen this week. First with Henry, then with Joy. I think Henry is such a good kid and so well acted. I genuinely think they do so well at conveying a mother-son relationship. I feel the way they show how those awkward tween early teenage years are so tricky is really spot on. The boy growing up, the mum doing her best to understand him, connect with him and nurture him. No child comes with an instruction book, and it is hard trying to understand those years as a mother to a son, speaking from experience. I think they do that well, showing the impact of no father figure in the home setting and the impact of having had a negative father figure in the past. I do think these scenes like this add to the feeling of reality, the just normalness of everyday life and the slow building of character and storylines. More of this, please. As for the comparative Wednesday episodes, both were painful to listen to, but for completely different reasons. That scene between Lynn and Alice, though, goodness. I walked into the living room after listening, and I think my family thought something must have been up, as it really shook me. For me, it was the kind of the shock of the sudden disconnection from the just pure warmth from Lillian, Alice's decision to ask her to leave as she wanted an early night, and then the reasons why becoming clear, and the sound effects were just horrid to hear. It was so well done. I really don't know where this one's going to go. The Thursday night episode was almost as chilling, given Alice had a seeming positive change in character. The old Alice was back, but perhaps not the old Alice Lillian meant. Oh my. It's not going to be easy listening from here on in. Thank goodness we all have each other to get through it all. Ta-ra a bit.
Thank you for that, Michelle. Yes. So many good points there. And I can say, I love about the Archers fandom, being able to talk on our Facebook page, call in, emails and all this, and then the joy of meeting people last night that I've never seen in person, and talking and continuing talking about the Archers, despite the fact that several of my children also were there. I think they were just curious to see what the Archers fandom world was like, and being able to support each other, because people have things that happen in their lives that these stories do touch us a bit. I can understand what Michelle was saying about we have each other, and I think it's great, and I love the fandom side of it. She talked also about the Helen and Henry relationship, and I agreed with her, as I said earlier, the excellent acting and the writing for him. Lillian's reaction on Thursday morning. I know you have something to say about this, Stephen, so probably it's best for me to leave it to you to say it, but I was chilled by the joyfulness on Thursday morning, whereas other people thought, well, she won't have drunk then.
Yeah, I'm sure that she had had something to drink in the morning to give her a nice buzz, and she was then rushing around, being incredibly active and hype. And as Lillian said, it was like having the old Alice back, but the old Alice was, for a lot of that time, drunk Alice. I hope that it doesn't last very long. I hope that either she's found out or she makes a huge mistake or something and shocks herself back into the path of sobriety. Because apart from anything else, I'm getting really, really, really bored with this storyline. And I know that a lot of people, including myself, have had some experience of either alcoholism or dealing with somebody else with alcoholism. And so there's a lot to echo in people's lives. But even so, I think we've had enough.
Yeah, It's an uncomfortable listen, isn't it? It brings all kinds of emotions out in oneself. And then, yeah, not an easy story. And like you, I hope that it is a swift end to this.
So as people have said, it's unrealistic that you wouldn't have a slip up on the way. So maybe that's why we've got this. Yeah. It is the slip up to demonstrate that it's not easy. And yeah. Having got that out of the way, we will now move to a point where we forget that Alice is an alcoholic, much as I think we forgot that Sid was an alcoholic.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that was a terrible job, wasn't it, that he had running a pub as an alcoholic. Very interesting.
There was one point I did want to pick up when Michelle said that children don't come with instruction manuals, because I'm sure I remember when my son came home from the cottage hospital in Chipping Norton. He had a little red binder with him with his name on the front. Obviously, I assumed that was the instruction manual. Being a man, of course, I never read it.
I'm not even going to deign to reply to that, Stephen. I'll let the caller in as of next week batter your head.
So in that case, shall we move on to our next call?
Best do that.
This one is from Lillian.
Hello, everybody. Jacqueline, Stephen. All Dumpty Dummers everywhere, and all of you that are currently enjoying the conference. Lillian McCarthy here from Middlesbrough. I tried to send an email, but unfortunately it wouldn't send. Anyway, I wanted to express my dismay at the latest developments in the storyline with Alice. That episode on Wednesday sent shivers up my spine. It was just awful to listen to the end of that. And then I was very pleasantly surprised on Thursday to hear the episode, which I was actually dreading, because I thought Martha was going to walk in and find a very drunken Alice in goodness knows what state. And I was glad. I was relieved. However, I have a feeling that my relief is going to be short-lived, because I think things are going to get worse. I have to say, though, I did enjoy Thursday's episode. And I really enjoyed the references to Corfu, because we're due to go in May, although we won't be going to Sidari. However, it did make me want olives. Anyway, I'll leave it there, and I wish everybody at the conference a lovely weekend. Hope everybody's had or having a great time, and hopefully we'll be able to make it to the next one, obviously depending on where. Anyway, good luck, everybody. Take care. Bye for now.
Thank you for that call, Lillian. I have to confess, I've never been to Corfu. I read a lot about it when I was growing up, because Gerald Durrell wrote his My Family and Other Animals series about Corfu. And I know various school friends of mine would go on holiday to Corfu. We went off to the Dordogne instead, which is another of these places that in the 60s, early 70s were packed out with British people. But that's not really about Ambridge. So let's get back to Alice. And I think that, yes, things are going to get worse. There are various ways it could get worse. Lillian was saying that she hated the idea of it being Martha who suffers as a result of this. I can see that would be quite painful. I also hope it isn't one that ends up with Chris discovering and shouting at her, because Chris is still completely irrational about all of this and hasn't got to grips with what's going on. And he would just go over the top, try and grab Martha from her. And
yeah.
I think we know that's what he would do. So I don't think we actually need to see it happen. I think something, maybe making some huge mistake at the stables and Lillian finding out, because I think Lillian would be a much more sympathetic person to help Alice work through what she's done and help her back on track.
Yes, I agree. And I think that Lillian is an ideal person because she thinks she's wanting something positive for Alice, whereas I always feel that Chris is sitting on her shoulder waiting for her to fail at something. Maybe that's not the case, but that's the impression that I personally take away from his relationship with Alice at this moment in time. So, yeah. So Lillian would be a good person to discover and help, because she would then bring in Kate and Brian, of course, as well. Yes, I'm hoping it's nothing dramatic with Martha that brings it to a head, because that's just creepy. And for exactly how you said, Chris, keep Chris out of it. Olives. I love an olive. I'm not a sweet person. I don't go for cake and biscuits and chocolates and stuff, but anything savoury like that, yeah. So I actually rather like the idea of that picky tea that Joy and Helen were having with nibbles and the bread and everything. But it sounds like it was bits of stuff left over from the farm shop. And I wondered, maybe he sent me off onto a flight of fancy about people who, for the tea rooms, does Fallon end up taking all the quiche and stuff home with her? All the bits that, you know, can't be sold. It's too late for tomorrow. So, and does Helen end up being all the crusty ends of cheese? So they end up doing a cheese fondue or a mulchy cheese pasta.
Fallon may have taken home all the leftovers at the end of the day in the past. But of course, now it's Natasha who will swoop in and take them home for Tom and the twins.
Yes, of course. I had forgotten that part of it. So poor Harrison's probably starving as well. That won't be helping his brain. But there was a scene that nobody's phoned in about, you know, the cricket with Henry. Harrison was brilliant with him. But the fact that Fallon was there as well. And I'm really enjoying the Harrison and Fallon relationship at the moment. Over the last few weeks, we've seen them having what Susan and Neil would probably call chilly time. And they've had their kind of, I don't know, it was a silly thing at Grey Gables, but Fallon going towards Harrison and then Harrison going towards Fallon and then their relationship around their home life and the just general domesticity. And then seeing that Fallon turned up as a wicketkeeper to support him and his supporter, Henry. I think it's brilliant. I'm loving that side of the Harrison story.
Yes, I think they're both the people. And I think that it's good to see a relationship that seems to be working so well.
Yeah. Yeah. We don't all want to have disasters. Those are our first few calls. There are some more to come, a couple, and we'll hear them very soon. And if you would like to join in by calling us yourself or drop us a line, by message or by email, Stephen is here to tell you how. And all the details are also in the show notes.
The first option is to record a message or a plot prediction by going to www.speakpipe.com/dumptydum. The next option is to send us a voice note or a message via WhatsApp on 07810 012 881. And of course, if you're outside the UK, you have to add the +44 on the front of that. Please keep your calls to a maximum of 2 minutes. And finally, we have an email address that you can contact us on if you would rather write to us with your views. And a maximum here of 250 words, please. The email address is dumptydum@mail.com. But do bear in mind you need to be at least 18 to contribute.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
So let's go back to our calls. Who's next, Stephen?
Next, we have Claire from Clapham.
Hi, Dumpty Dum. It's Claire from Clapham here. Just arrived in that there, London. Ready for this weekend's conference, which I'm very much looking forward to, and looking forward to meeting some fellow Dumpty Dummers very soon. Just wanted to reflect on this week where I think as someone who has been affected by other people's drinking and know a lot of people in that situation, I have to say, of course, we're all disappointed in Alice for relapsing, and it's a real shame. But I can't help but feel that she's going to get caught up again in sort of Alice's story, where actually one of the interesting things I think which was happening is reflecting how Alice was trying to help, assist, control somebody else's behaviour. And that's actually quite an interesting and familiar storyline. So yeah, very much wanting to focus on that, but I suspect we won't. And I do fear for what will happen, and I particularly fear for what will happen with Chris, because he isn't going to cope very well, I don't think, with any of this. And it's because he wasn't ready really to understand how Alice was dealing with things. So yeah, let's see what happens and hope for better times ahead. See you soon. Bye.
Thank you for that, Claire. Yes, it was great to meet you last night as well. Yeah, as we've talked about Chris, Chris is just going to be... What do you think his immediate reaction would be if he finds out that Alice is drinking again, Stephen?
I think he'd insist on taking Martha away from her. She'd want full-time care of her.
Yeah, with no holds barred, really. I don't think he would allow Martha to go back alone with Alice at all. And that's a nasty spiral, of course.
Yes, he would say, how can I trust you? You lied to us all about drinking, and then you got better, and then you lied again. And so how will we ever know that you've started drinking again? So I don't think you should ever have Alice. And that will result in him dumping her on Neil and Susan on a regular basis.
Yeah, exactly, because he has to work, because he doesn't have the system set up to be a full-time carer of a small child. Yeah, as you say, but both Neil and Susan are working full-time. Emma's going off on her own tree-climbing activities, so she's not going to be around to support her little brother. Brian and the rest of the family from the other side would have to be brought in, and you see, that's a clash for them, isn't it?
Yes, I don't think there's anybody really who I think Chris would trust to do that anyway. I think this is part of the problem. Chris relies on Susan hugely. I think ultimately Neil might be the one who would have to talk him round to getting back to a more balanced thing, because farriery and small children do not combine.
No, there are some jobs where you can take your children to work, but others where you definitely can't, and being a farrier is one of them. Claire said something interesting, because it was the fact that Alice has got herself into this situation because she was trying to control somebody else's drinking, with trying to help Harry. And I understand where she's coming from, but I think we were all screaming from the rooftops a few weeks ago about the fact that she shouldn't be the one to be sponsoring him. And really, the proof is that she shouldn't have been. But do you think it was the conversation with Eve that sent her over the top?
It was hard to tell. I'm not sure what it was about the conversation with Eve that would have done that, because it was in many ways good news that Harry had gone off to this place for treatment. We'll have a call. We'll talk about some aspects of that. So it was a bit strange that it was that. On the other hand, maybe it was seeing the state that Eve was in, because even though Harry had gone off treatment, Eve was sounding a complete wreck. I thought that was a brilliant scene with
excellent
the two
scene.
Of them. I thought that the actor who played Eve did it brilliantly.
Yeah, I agree. One of the things I took away from it, perhaps, was that Alice walked away shocked because she saw Eve distressed. Because, of course, the last conversation she had with Eve was that she wasn't going to have anything to do with Harry. They'd had enough and all those things. And it must have made Alice stop and think about how her actions had affected her mother, her parents, her family. And you walk away having seen a mother who's been in the same position as her mother was, how her father was when Brian took her to rehab, when she behaved so badly in that service station and she told him she hated him. It must have brought things flooding back. And I think the emotion of that, which she at the time she didn't necessarily take on board, it's just, I just think that will have affected her very badly.
Yes, I think that could well be part of it. Let's move on to our final call. And this one is from an occasional, but not for a long time, caller in a row. It's Matthew.
Hello, Dumdy Dummers. This is Matthew Horthpool, occasional caller in a row from Coventry, although I haven't called in for a while, so it's good to be back. I'm sure there'll be many calls about Alice and her return to alcohol, so I shall leave that. But I do want to talk a little bit about Harry, because there's something that's bothering me a little bit. Namely, when Alice was in the throes of her alcoholism, she went to rehab. And at the time, a lot of people commented that it was not necessarily the norm that somebody would get into rehab. And it was only thanks to her wealth or the wealth of her family that she was able to do that. And that's fine. I accepted that because it's Alice, and that's fine. I'm a bit disappointed that they've chosen to send another character to rehab. I appreciate that he's also quite a wealthy character. I appreciate that it's also in character for him to go to rehab. But I just feel like if they were going to try and explore the alcohol storyline, they could have explored it in a different way. They could have had a character who wouldn't have been able to go to rehab, not necessarily because he didn't want to go to rehab, but because he couldn't have afforded to go to rehab or some other reason prevented him. I just think that this idea that, oh, well, if you're an alcoholic, you go to rehab and it's all sorted. Once, fair enough, it's just once, but twice, it just feels like it's not really the way that the Archers should be portraying that storyline. Yeah, just wanted to comment in and say that. Be interested to hear what other people think about it.
Thank you for that call, Matthew. And I think it's a very valid point that rehab is a very privileged approach to dealing with alcoholism. But on the other hand, it's quite difficult to see how they might have managed that. I don't see Harry almost not as a freestanding character, but as an adjunct to Alice's story. He was brought in, I think, for this whole business of stressing Alice to the point of breaking. And so he had to be somebody from the same sort of social level that Alice is. And as a result, he's another version of the same story rather than looking at it differently. And while they could have had Alice in a relationship with somebody who couldn't afford rehab, I think that would have been quite difficult to work through when we got to the point where they needed treatment. And was Alice just going to abandon them and let them wander off? I think it's quite difficult, and I really wouldn't want another alcoholism story. I think that Jack, and this was a long time ago, of course, he ended up in a sanatorium in Scotland, but that was end-of-life care rather than any sort of attempt at treatment. By the time he'd got there, it was all too late, and Sid didn't go for any treatment, but somehow seemed to manage things. So I just think that we've had a series of alcoholism stories over the years. I don't think we needed another one at the same time as this one. So it had to be a branch of Alice's story. And I think that ends up with limitations that you rightly identify.
Yeah, I agree with you, Stephen. But in fact, I did do a bit of research into how in the West Midlands, statistics about alcohol and drug abuse tend to be lumped together. And I don't mean that in a derogatory way. They don't separate them. I couldn't find any separation. Apparently, the average number of deaths in 100,000 nationally from drug and alcohol abuse is 235, and in the West Midlands, it's 266. The therapies, rehab therapies, countrywide, are classed as, there are two things. There's in-house, and there are talking and support therapies. The talking and support therapies are often free, whereas the in-house therapy, the rehab that we're talking about, they recommend a 90-day program, and it can cost from about $5,000 to $10,000, a 90-day program. People were quite correct saying that she got the therapy because of the wealth of her family, and Harry also has the backup of a wealthy family. As you say, we couldn't have lived through another storyline of how somebody going through Alcoholics Anonymous or any other talking therapies and counselling and mentoring without it really becoming their story. And this is Alice's story, as you say, an adjunct to Alice's story. So yeah, like Matthew, I feel quite disappointed that it's got another rich person's gone off to therapy, as if it's that easy for most people. Most addicts do not get that opportunity. Let's make it very clear. But as you said, it's perfectly logical in the realm of this story because it's about Alice. It's not about Harry. And I don't think we've never really said anything because nobody's ever called in to say it. But I've been worried about Harry from the start because I think he's not just an alcoholic. He sniffs all the time. Now, that's because I've been a mother of four children. Sniffing is one of my real bête noires. And Harry has a marked sniff. So does that demonstrate that he's not only an alcoholic, but he also has a drug problem?
Of course, Linda is famous for her sniffs, but that's a different sort of sniff.
Ah, yeah, it's not the same sniff. That irritates me as well, I'll tell you, Stephen. Well, thank you very much for all those calls. We do really, really enjoy hearing from you all. So please do call in next week. I think we've posed quite a few questions this week as well. So now, did we receive any emails and WhatsApp messages this week, Stephen?
Well, if you'd been listening at the start when
I must cut that bit out.
Yes, we had three. And first up, we had a WhatsApp message from Abby, who is a first-time texter in Europe, and it goes like this. Hello, Dumpty Dum. First-time texter Inra here, Abby from Yorkshire. I feel like the Archers writers have been laying breadcrumbs recently that can often go nowhere, but make me think potential plot predictions. the most recent one being Ed and Emma. Whilst I hope their tree surgery business goes well, I do feel they will have bought a lot of duff kit. But more importantly, I didn't like the way the scene faded out when Emma said she could kill Ed. I know this referred to Ed's comments to Chris, meaning that they missed out on the free night at Grey Gables. But it did get me thinking that tree surgery and chainsaw wielding is indeed a very dangerous game. Another plot prediction is with all Harrison and Fallon's sexy time and Maid Marian Friar Tuck shenanigans recently. I hope Fallon doesn't fall pregnant and want to get rid of the baby. I just don't see the future being rosy for the two of them. Anyway, enough of my thoughts for now. Thanks for the show, Abby.
Thank you for that, Abby. Welcome to the podcast, and thank you very much for making the time to be a first-time texter winner. Yes, I agree with you on both of those things. I don't like the sword of Damocles hanging over Ed's head, especially as this week he said, I couldn't bear it if anything happened to Em. It was chilling. And because he's nervous, maybe that makes it even more likely that an accident will happen. I don't know if he went into it confidently. I hope Ed's doing some strength training. Because as Ross said earlier, tree surgeons have to go up very high trees quite often. And it's quite a strength. You need to be a strong person to do it. Yeah, I think that's one of those things that...
I think you need to be quite strong to do sheep shearing and various other jobs that Ed does. So I suspect that he is starting from a much higher base level of strength and fitness than Emma has since she has been busy raising children and working in the tea room.
And the pub and the chicken factory and all the other jobs she does.
The chicken factory would probably have been helpful in that respect, but she hasn't done that for quite some time. So she's not really in the hard labour area at the moment.
No, that's very true.
Yeah, I'm not sure whether all this discussion about how dangerous it is portending imminent doom, or whether that would actually just be a bit too heavy-handed with Ed saying how dangerous it all was and then an accident happening, and whether it would be to him or to Emma and him saying to Harrison, oh, I told you so, and so forth. I hope that doesn't happen, because I think a lot of us want this to be a successful Grundy business,
yeah.
Even though that's a contradiction in terms, really.
But we love the fact that in The Archers, the stories go over a long time. I'm wondering whether, yeah, it'll all set up, all be successful, and then there will be some accidents. Statistically, an accident will happen later down the line rather than now. So it'll be very successful. I really hope it's successful for them. But then in a few years' time, an accident will be another storyline that comes along. But what do you think about the prediction of babies for Harrison and Fallon?
I think that there is a tendency among Archer's listeners to assume that every time people have sex, somebody gets pregnant. And I don't think so. I think they're sensible people. And I think particularly if they're going off for what appears to be on Fallon's part, quite a planned night of lust, that she would have made sure that that was covered off. We don't know what the arrangements they have between them are. But I would agree completely with Abby that if Fallon did get pregnant, it would be a bad thing. I suspect she's probably on the pill because she's long-term not wanting to have a child. So
exactly.
I think that's quite likely.
Yeah. She's been very clear about it. She doesn't want to have children, and she should take control. That's one of the things that women can do.
Yeah.
Taking control of your contraception so she won't have a mistake. I don't want it to happen, and I agree with you. But I find it quite amusing that Alice, of course, is now pregnant because she had sex with Harry on Wednesday or whatever day it was. So.
Exactly. Everybody is, because there's been quite a wave of sex in the village, I think.
Blimey, these people like rabbits, aren't they? But we also had an email from Amanda with the subject line, Archers. First ever email, listening in Thailand. Hi, all you lovely Dumpty Dummers. Thank you so much for your weekly entertainment that I've become addicted to recently. Having been an Archers addict since the turn of the century, I've only recently discovered your amazing podcast. Anyway, I'm sorry this may appear a negative comment, but having enjoyed listening to the many inventive and diverse storylines over the years, including the Archers Extra a few years ago, Wednesday's episode? What? Were all the scriptwriters away at a conference? Mate Marion mixed up identical suitcases? Was the script mixed up perhaps with someone's year 6 essay writing competition? I love the Archers and I now love Dumpty Dum too. Luckily, this hasn't dampened my enthusiasm, but come back, scriptwriters, the Archers need you. I hope to send a positive email soon. Amanda in Thailand.
Thank you for that email, Amanda, and welcome to Dumpty Dum. I'm glad you found us. I think you probably gathered from last week's podcast that you are not alone in thinking there was something very wrong with last Wednesday's episode. And I know that Nick Warburton has been responsible for some other somewhat silly storylines. He was the one who wrote the week when Freddie was first at the abattoir and we had that mix-up with David and his meat supply and the fact that fellow abattoir workers had hidden it in the wrong cupboard and so forth. And that felt, I think, pretty implausible at the time because it would go against everything that Vince had been saying about the way that he runs his abattoirs and he treats his staff with respect and you wouldn't get sort of behaviour. And there have been a few other instances, I think, of Nick Warburton going into this slightly farcical mode with distinctly mixed results. So I hope that that was just a brief blip. I hope that we won't have too many repeats of that and that you'll have a lot more positive stuff to talk about. And I think this week's episodes have been much better than that lot.
Nick Warburton often tries to get an element of humour that does sometimes grate into his script writing. But it's always when we're building up to something big and tense, the contrast between what's going on in one place and with one family or with one character and another. But I think he went over the top last week, definitely, as I know that you were very distressed with, and as were many other people, with the treatment of Brad last week. So we'll move on now, shall we, and see. Let's see what Chris in Indiana has to say.
Okay. And Chris's email this week has the subject line of Ask Alice, and it goes like this. Greetings, Stephen. Welcome back, Jacqueline. Well, I guess the big news this week is Alice. We all saw it coming, didn't we? If we didn't see it before, what about the whole time she was trying to throw Lillian out of the house? And wasn't that a great sound effect? The booze glug glugging into the glass. It actually made me want to drink too. Alice is feeling great again, so here comes months of Alice thinking she can drink, and spiraling down to the bottom before she remembers she's an alcoholic. Personally, I look forward to it. Real alcoholism is a crap show I had to grow up watching. But the Archers is drama, and I love messy Alice, ruin a funeral Alice, throw a rock through Susan's window Alice. Maybe she can throw a rock through Helen's dairy window, or seduce George. I've missed messy Alice and gleefully await her return. It's going to be an ugly ride, but I now hope that Harry Chilcott served his purpose. We've seen the last of him because he is wearisome and boring. Yours, Chris in Indiana.
Brilliant. Brilliant message as always, Chris. Yeah, Alice definitely is written as a drama queen, a drama making, the whole storyline creates drama. And that's what we like. It is a drama. We can't ignore it. But as Stephen said earlier, I'm getting a little bit wearied by the whole alcoholic storyline going on, and I want it to end fairly quickly. And I think Stephen, I hadn't thought of it until Stephen said it, that maybe this is showing that alcoholics have a blip. But I have a question. What do we think the glug was? Where'd the bottle come from anyway? But I don't believe Alice would have had a bottle of alcohol somewhere stashed. I think she specifically went and bought it. She wouldn't have had it hidden somewhere, but she hid it at the back of a cupboard until Lillian had gone. Do we think it was wine? Do you think it's vodka? What do you reckon she might have had, Stephen?
She was definitely a vodka drinker when she was hiding it from other people. And the point about vodka is it's much harder to detect the smell of it. Although once you get enough to drink, you start reeking of alcohol anyway. It doesn't matter what it is. But I think that it might have been wine, but it's probably vodka. And then I think the bright and bouncy Alice the next morning was because she'd had something first thing. And again, vodka's the most likely one for that because you wouldn't smell it on the breath. You wouldn't really notice it until it starts sweating out of you.
Blimey. There we go then. Yes. And I agree with what we said earlier. Chris has said, yeah, let's get rid of Harry Chilcott now. He's definitely served his purpose.
He's gone off to rehab and with luck, yes, he'll come back somewhere else.
Maybe. Let's move on to Facebook, where we have lots of very lovely, busy, friendly, and very thought-provoking members. And we need to give a very warm welcome to the newest of you, who are Jan Dore, Graham Anstey, Catherine Langley, Mandy Taylor,
Gary Innite, Ryan Ekers, Joanne Regers, and Laurie McNeil. So, let's hear what our Facebook group has been talking about this week from Vicky.
Hello everyone, Vicky Cole here, calling in very late on Friday night after getting back from London. A long way to go for a quick evening meetup, but lovely to catch up with familiar faces and voices and to meet a few new people. I'm very sad I can't make it to the Academic Archers Conference this year, but I'm sure there will be other opportunities. I hope everyone has a great time and that you do well in the ferret competitions. Please, can we have many photos on the Facebook page? Okay, on to the Facebook roundup. Let's start with Ed and the tree surgery. Jonah Titchmarsh thinks that Ed needs a slap. He should grow up and think through the commitments before taking such a big step. Raffy J thinks it's astonishing that Ed hasn't previously come across the risks. Kate Penfold has been Googling, and with the 1 in 120 chance of serious injury or death, she gets why Ed is nervous. That post threw up some memories of Jethro Larkin, Clary's dad, who died in a tree-related situation. Or as Sue Briley describes it, David's first murder. Our Michelle and our Jacqueline have encountered real-life scenarios relating to tree surgery and its dangers. Darcy Jorgensen is wondering how much of Ed's fear is of Emma becoming a gladiator. Helen is back. And Henry. We love Henry. Some of us don't love Helen. Kim Bowyer thinks she is a well-meaning but controlling parent, trying so hard to be supportive, but it's her subliminal messages that get through to Henry. Chris Gibson says she's just as awful as he remembers. Our Glynn suggests that every conversation she has with him sounds like an interrogation, although our Witherspoon stands up for Helen, thinking she's become more relaxed with Henry. Kate Lyle also felt that Helen listened to Henry and helped him to do what he wanted to do. Now then, on to Alice. Luckily, not that many mentions of Harry on the Facebook page. First, there was some debate about whether it was an alcoholic drink that we heard Alice glugging down so desperately. Ray Milner initially thought not, but it seems that the BBC synopsis has subsequently made it clear that it was alcohol. This is annoying, as it still hasn't been made clear in the programme, and we could still be on tenterhooks now. There were discussions about when and where she bought the alcohol, before or after the visit to Eve. Has she had it hidden at home all along? It was certainly a sad listen, heartbreaking according to Gillian Rogers. She says it's all wrong that Alice sounds so confident and relaxed now, after weeks of being tearful. Marilyn Richardson wasn't expecting Alice to be bright-eyed and bushy-tailed and running the stables like clockwork. Witherspoon thinks that Alice drank wine Wednesday night. She could have had just a couple. And now Alice will think a couple of drinks before bed will help, not hurt her. And Stephen thinks she might have had a glass of something the morning after as well. Dave Leasley says that he just wants the characters to live happily ever after. We shall see. Well, that's it for this week. Do come and have a look at the Facebook page and join in if you can. Till next time, good night.
Thank you, Vicky, and thank you so much to everyone on the Dumpty Dum Facebook group. If you'd like to join them, please do, but please don't forget to answer the very easy membership questions so that we know that you are a real person. Now, let's move on to Twitter, where you'll find us at Dumpty Dum. Make sure you include the Archers hashtag using a capital T and A so the visually impaired who use screen readers can enjoy any Archers-based tweets. As well as at Dumpty Dum, Stephen can occasionally be found at Wenlock House.
And we can both also be found following the Archers on Blue Sky. I am at wenlock.bsky.social.
And I am at jberto.bsky.social. So let's find out who's won the Twitter medal this week.
Tweet, tweet, Tiger.
Hello, Jacqueline, Stephen, and Dumpty Dummers everywhere. It's Purple Pumpkin here with Tweets and Skeets of the Week. And my thanks as ever to Bernadette, Jen, Glynn, and everyone who tags at Dumpty Dum to make sure we see all the best ones. This week on Twitter and Blue Sky, I've been particularly enjoying the erudition of two venerable experts on all matters Ambridge. On Twitter, Kate Crichton, at Kate_Crichton, who I believe was responsible for the Friday lockdown quizzes, pointed us to the 10th anniversary of Tom and Kirsty's disaster of a non-wedding. Kirsty said the date would stick in people's minds, and it has for her. While over on Blue Sky, Brenda Selwyn at brendaselwyn.bsky.social was discussing the allocation of patients to general practitioners and reminded us that when the Ambridge practice closed about 20 years ago, the patients were all assigned to practices in Borchester or Hollerton, which is now apparently Darrington, seemingly at random, which caused some consternation. Also on Blue Sky, there was a great thread started by Loma Lindy 12 at lomalindy12.bsky.social, listing the countryside code, Ambridge style. She started us off with, lemon drizzle cake is never ever dry. Others chimed in. At elizabennett.bsky.social said, it is completely normal for buildings and whole farms to move around for the convenience of the scriptwriters. While Goldilocks on the Levels at goldilevels.bsky.social noted that Linda Snell will always get you to do what she wants in the end, and jackiecrofty.bsky.social highlighted that the GP is always local, friendly and available. And there's plenty more where those came from. But now to this week's medals for Blue Sky Skeets and X Posts, all of which we continue to consider as Tweets of the Week. In bronze position, it's ungoogleable, at all underscore sweetness. No, Azra, no, you don't want Helen as a friend. Make friends with Costanza. Lots of llama, not much drama. The silver medalist is Ian, at Ruther Ian. With Laura saying, hey Alistair, are you leg before wicket or are you just pleased to see me? And the gold medal goes to Nick, at Check Your Sheds. Alice sound happier? She should drink more often. It really calms her down. And on that unrealistic note, that's it for this week. I hope to see you all on hashtag The Archers on Twitter or Blue Sky next week.
Thank you for that, Theo, and congratulations to everyone who was mentioned in this week's roundup. And don't forget, we're on Instagram at DumptyDum, where Theo looks after things and art. Today, we're going to be searching at the Academic Archers Conference for somebody to take over our DumptyDum Instagram page.
Next week, Jacqueline will be back home in Brittany. I will be camping in a field in Herefordshire, but we will attempt to record as usual at first thing on Saturday morning. So please get your calls in by midnight on Friday, UK time. And as we come to the end of this episode, we need to say thanks to all our wonderful contributors and to the team of Dumpty Dummers behind the scenes. And we need to say a great big thanks to all of you who are listening to us. We love making this podcast and sharing our love of the Archers around the world.
And we must say thank you to Kim Durham and Sunny Ormond for their voices and our podcasting parents, Lucy B. Freeman and Royfield Brown.
Thank you so much for listening and joining us today. We're now off to sit with our friends at the next table.
Well, or even on the same table this weekend.
It's goodbye from me.
And it's goodbye from me. Dumpty, 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 dum. Dumpty, dumpty, da, da. Dumpty, 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 dum. Dumpty, dilly, dum. Dumpty, dilly, dumpty, dilly, dumpty, dilly, dum. Dumpty, 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 dum. Dumpty, dilly, dum.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.